If you were like so many sovereign softpreneurs, you've probably been daydreaming lately about burning it all down and becoming a trad wife. And on this week's episode of the Softpreneur Podcast, we have one of the most amazing conversations I think we have ever had as women about the state of womaning in business today with an incredible guest who you've likely not heard of. And she is going to blow your mind and help you sink into your womb space, into your heart space, and have a deeper understanding, we hope, of how to woman in work today.
Hey, hey, softpreneurs. There is magic happening right now because you are here with us and we are well met. That is Elisa Joachim and I am Dawn Petrin. And yeah, we're here to help visionary entrepreneurs like you usher in the new paradigm. And we want to help you express your essence louder and prouder so you can create more profitability and possibility. And today we have Suzanne Moskovich in the house. This is our longest podcast recording yet because we could not stop talking about this amazing subject. Full disclosure, I don't think we came to any resolution. So I will say that if you are questioning your role as an entrepreneur, as a woman, listen in and then let us know what it like lit up in your mind and in your heart. We spoke about feminine essence. We spoke about like matching your business to your cycle, matching your calendar to your cycle. We recorded this at the right appropriate time for Suzanne in her cycle. So that was super fun. We spoke about, as usual, Suzanne and her spiritual path, working as a feminine being, letting go of social media entirely, and what it means to have actual like quiet in your life. And we also looked at like, is the softpreneur goal even attainable, especially as a mother. So yeah, listen in. This was an amazing conversation. We had so much fun. And I don't know, after we came off, we were like, we need to start a whole new podcast only on this topic with Suzanne. So that's how much we loved it. And we hope you love it too.
Okay, let's find a prayerful space within ourselves. Strong auras of love and joy, sparkly pink light and Reiki and sweetness energy, keeping us strong in our own structures. Divine Mother, Heavenly Father, Friend, Beloved God, Great Masters, Jesus Christ, Babaji, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Beloved Paramhansa Yogananda, Saints and Sages of all true faith, joyfully we bow to you all. May this podcast episode be a deep blessing to all of our listeners and to Suzanne, ushering in a deeper era of trust, self-trust, trust in the divine, trust in humanity, and collective, sending so much love and peace and joy and abundant prosperity to all who listen today. And may this ripple out, and also may there be a great receiving for Suzanne and her family and everyone who her work touches. Thank you, Divine Mother, God, Christ, Guru, Om, Peace, Amen.
Yay, welcome back, everyone. So excited today because today we are chatting with Suzanne Moskovich, who is like the behind-the-scenes powerhouse running some of the businesses that you know in the world. And yet you probably have never heard of Suzanne unless you were really into yoga over a decade ago and got into podcasting. So Suzanne, thank you so much for being here. So much of honestly all connected success in the last couple of years has actually been from you trusting us and bringing us on with your clients. So thank you so much for that. Just putting it out there like, oh my God, thank goodness for Suzanne. And we always start with the same question when we have guests on. And so the question is, do you have a spiritual practice? And is there anything you'd like to share about it?
Yeah, well, firstly, thank you for that intro. And thank you for having me on. It's been a long time since I've been on a podcast. And it's reminding me how much I miss connecting with really cool people. And I have many spiritual practices. And I'm sure you guys have also noted, you know, that anything can sort of be seen as a spiritual practice when, you know, when looked at through a spiritual lens. I guess one practice that I would like to share today is something that I've been sort of doing ritualistically over the past year, I would say. And that is, I could say charting, but it's not really that. It's observing like my cyclical nature, both as a woman, also as a human being that experiences cycles of day and night and four seasons of a year and birth and death, rebirth. But I think specifically as a woman, so I use something called a moon dial, which you guys have probably heard of before, where I allow myself to observe like the various seasons of my menstrual cycle. And I take note of everything from, you know, physical experience to the emotional to the psycho-spiritual in the form of dreams or insights that come. And I let myself attune to, let's say, and like play in the different archetypes that make themselves known during the different phases of my cycle. And so interestingly, I would say in like the luteal phase of my cycle, for me, it comes online more around day 20, day 21, up until the time that I bleed is when I make contact with like what I call my inner enchantress. And I've heard it spoken to as an inner sorceress. And she is probably the one that most women, I think, have difficulty embracing, because she is able to cut like straight through the bullshit. Like she can see through the haze, right, of our avoidance, and often makes us aware of what's in our shadow and wants to be brought to light, right? But when we're in resistance to her, we can experience that as tension. So oftentimes I will feel a frustration or a rage or an anger or a sharpness. And when I allow myself, when I take note of that through this observation, and when I allow myself to lean into that tension, usually I can receive very direct insight into what it is that's not in alignment in my life. And it can come like pretty, you know, like pretty directly. Like I've had moments where I've woken up like at 3 a.m. and I just have like flash insight. They're not my words, almost, of what needs to shift. And then oftentimes I'll take my bleed, so my inner winter, which is known as like the crone archetype, to like let that land and sort of digest, reflect on like what it is that, you know, how to bring that insight into integration and actuality in my lifescape. And then I'll use, you know, like my inner spring and summer. So that would be like maiden mother phases of my cycle to commit to one or two things that are going to bring that insight, that piece of wisdom into integration or into full form. And in a lot of ways, I feel like that helps me stay in alignment with my path. And each time I practice this, I find that new wisdom comes more easily. And I can start to embrace more of my dark side, which I think that women have more difficulty with in our culture that really celebrates the maiden mother, right? To start to look towards the dark feminine for our gifts. And so that is something that has become a practice for me. And I think connects me like deeply to both my essence, my nature, and my path.
Okay, this is so deep and so wonderful, and also like venerates the feminine in such a beautiful way. I feel like our society like pathologizes the luteal phase, you know, and so I actually, it reminds me of when my life wasn't the way I wanted it. And the only time I knew that was when I was PMSing, you know, and then people are like, ah, what's wrong with you? And it's like, I knew even then, but you put it really beautifully. I knew even then that it was just making me aware of shit that was not appropriate for me, that I was able to bury the rest of the time. And I would say for years I did. I just kept on burying it. And now intuitively, when I do get like the grouchies about something during that time, I don't bury it in the same way. I'm not doing as good of a job as you. So we're going to talk about this some more. You know, I need some coaching around this of like then sitting with it and like bringing it into the world, like through the phases. But thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's like so deep and so wise and such a nicer way to think about the sensations and the feelings that happen through those cycles rather than like take an Advil and smoke some pot or something, you know, get the F over it. So
it also becomes something, you know, as women and especially with this like rise and really speaking about the feminine and all of that, there's a way that we kind of like shun this idea of control. Like it's something that a lot of women are trying to get away from. But something that I really love about like the practice of really observing our cyclical nature is that I don't want to say it's something that you can control. It's not like that. It's something you can count on. Like there's stability to that, right? Like I know that my spring is going to come again. My summer is going to come again. My fall is going to come again. My winter is going to come again, right? Like I can come to expect that. And then there becomes a predictability that I think is actually really soothing to a woman's nervous system where I know that if I'm in a funk, you know, yes, I can go in and discover what's there for me to be known and to integrate. But I also know that I'm going to come out of that. And then I know that there are certain gifts that are available to me in that maiden mother phase that I can lean into in fullness. And then I know that there are other gifts that I can lean into later on in my cycle. So there's this predictability in some way that I find actually really quite soothing. This idea of impermanence, right? Which is part of our cyclical nature again. So yeah.
So refreshing. It's interesting because I think that like I've even found in myself and maybe some other women entrepreneurs can relate a sort of resistance to fully leaning into the cyclical nature of energy because you want to stay at a certain productivity level all the time and instead like playing into perhaps a more like process or receptive orientation with your own energy, which I haven't really played it against my menstrual cycle so much as I know is available to me. Although I've done the cycle track and I know where I'm at each time. But really, instead, I have, you know, the list of things I think I can do in a day, and then I'm like, but where is my energy? Where is my spark for this? And really listening. So I'm so curious what you feel because you're in a role that, like, as a business owner, where there's often a high level of kind of quote productivity asked of you. How do you experience like your listening being tied to actually your ability to, I don't know. I don't even know if we want to prize productivity, but to like continue to be an entrepreneur in the frame that we're all in or to get things done, as it were.
Yeah. So that's a really good question. And it's something that I sort of dance with because, as you guys know, so I technically have my own business, so to speak, but I play in somebody else's business or other people's businesses. So it's not all on my timeline, right? So I'm not always just at the at my own leisure, you know, in terms of my calendar. I have clients that have launches and things going on. You know, I might have to pop on a meeting when I'm bleeding, and that's not my preference, so to speak. And so I do this in a couple of different ways. So for as much as I can control with regards to my own workload and my own calendar, I try to do it according to the different phases of my cycle and the gifts that are available to me during those phases. So I know that my inner spring is a time for planning, right? So if I'm working with a client on a project and we're putting together, we're envisioning, you know, what this launch is going to look like, all the different components of it, we're putting together a timeline, like that's a great time for me to start to put that together for a client and start to help envision create strategy. It's a time of rebirth, right? So we're starting new projects, new ventures, and to start to put that into a project timeline or a project plan, like that all works really well. So if I can help it, I will put those types of tasks during that time on my calendar. And then my mother phase, like that's my phase of ovulation. So I know that I've got a lot more force. So if there are big tasks that need completion, that require energy, if I need to be on calls, you know, a lot, that type of stuff, I try to designate it for that period of time. You know, so like this, I was pretty strategic about saying, okay, I want this to land somewhere between like you know, my ovulation moving into, you know, my enchantress phase, because I know I'm more communicative during that. I'm more articulate during that time. I'll look better on screen. Like all of these things like take a role, you know? And then I know that during my fall season is when I know that I can like slay a to-do list. Like I'm like in wrap-up mode. I can get it done, right? Because but I'm also slowing down. And so oftentimes I'll put that in my calendar, like slow down. And it doesn't always, so that just means like not booking back-to-back meetings. It means giving myself a little bit of spaciousness in the day for lunch break. It means giving myself time to come down before I, you know, to close my laptop, come down before I make the drive to go pick up my son from school, like to really create a little bit more breathability in my day. And then when I'm bleeding, so, you know, ideally I'm not on calls and ideally I'm working at a slower pace and ideally I'm doing more of like, I'm kind of assigning more of like the lower level tasks that I don't have to put much thought into, but I need to like maybe subtly check off my to-do list. That being said though, what I have come to, especially as being a mom, is that it's not always 100% possible, right? To like, I'm just going to lay on the couch for 5 days or whatever it is. And so I started orienting around more of like an internal rest. And I had heard the acronym at one point. So for rest, so reduce energy, slow time. And I often remind myself of that. So like if I'm sitting on the couch with a laptop, can I like close the laptop? Or if I'm sitting, can I be lying down? Or can I prepare, you know, can I have a ritual of just preparing like an infusion of herbs that I sip slowly? Or can I light a candle while I work to remind me to soften? These types of things that like internally orient me towards slowness and rest and grace with myself. And then I also make an effort to like get rid of anything extraneous on the calendar or on my to-do list. Like that's, and a big part of that becomes prep. So I make a lot of my food in advance of my bleed. So there's not really any cooking that needs to happen, like that type of stuff. But I also think that this idea of observing our cycles and aligning with them, it asks women to really start to come into a relationship with receiving, asking for help, and setting boundaries. And I think a lot of women learn this in their postpartum period, which is in and of itself very similar to our menstruation. And like you can think of your menstruation as like a mini postpartum in many ways. And that's when it first came online for me, this idea of needing to learn to ask for help, receive help, and set boundaries, right? And I find that it's interesting, right? Because it means that when I'm bleeding, I'm probably going to say no to the birthday party invite that my son was invited to. And then I have mom guilt around that, or I'm going to have to ask somebody to take him. Like there's so many different things we come up against as women that feel like, oh, it's easier to just like pretend I'm not bleeding and go. You know what I mean? But there's a way that I think we lose ourselves and our magic in that. And I think that part of what has made me, I want to say like valuable to other people in their business is interestingly my ability to align with my feminine gift. So it's like not something that I necessarily want to repress. So I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Oh man, I think so much of this is so brilliant. And I'm so glad that we're speaking to this. I feel that so many of our listeners probably need permission to like set the stage to say no to the birthday party or the Zoom call. And you know, I'm not sure how to like support, like, well, actually that's half true. I think one way that like in the work that we're all doing together that we support that is like, it's like a safe place to be like, this is where I'm at right now in my phase. And, you know, and maybe not with every person we work with, but, you know, in our like behind the scenes Telegram chat where we're chatting out all this stuff that's actually happening in the business before it gets moved to Slack or something, that's like a place where working with people who are open, like to hearing and supporting that, like our guy, Scott, who's like the most like lovely, intuitive, energetic, the soft man I've ever met at the same time as being such a like able to get her done sort of dude. But I definitely feel, and with Elisa, like I have felt like, okay, it's okay to say like, I'm feeling this way right now. And it might be because of where I'm at in my cycle. And so let's take it as truth, but also realize that it might not be as like burn it down as it feels like in this moment. Like maybe it's more like a, let's look at the next 3 months as a way to like exit the situation, not necessarily like, I'm out. So I definitely am grateful, Suzanne, because I know that maybe me not being as aware has been like a little bit hard probably because I'm like, oh my God, this is like, wow, we're holding a lot. Can we actually hold this much? And then when you realize that it is, and it's true though, this is the thing I think we need to really emphasize is like when we're in that phase, it's not like we're lying to ourselves. It's like you said, the enchantress, the sorceress, it's like our connection to our actual needs and truths. And that is just way stronger then, right?
Right. But there's a way to be in right relationship to it, right? And I think that's where the dance comes in a little bit and probably a bit of discernment as well. So it's not to say that, you know, you get like this big, like, F no in your body, you know, around the time of your inner fall or your enchantress. And then you're like, oh, well, I'm just PMSing, right? Like it's not to say that, but like to be in right relationship with that, like, so that I think that actually is a time to listen to your inner critic. I actually think that is a time to engage your inner critic in a loving way, to really kind of to hone in on to hear its story, right? But when you're bleeding, that's not the time to engage that inner critic, right? Because it's not in right relationship. And I also think that whatever comes through, let's say in that inner fall, can be digested and reflected on during your bleed in your inner winter before it's necessarily acted on. So it's like nothing needs to happen right away, which is also what we learn through cyclical living, right? Like we don't go from summer we don't go from winter to summer, right? There's this in-between stage. There's a void. So I think that there's take some discernment. There takes some knowing how to be in right relationship to those inner archetypes. Knowing, you know, kind of what those markers are can help. So like I just know now that like winter is not my time to engage my inner critic. So when I hear those voices come up, I can lovingly set them aside as opposed to hearing them come up and saying like, well, this is PMS and you know what I mean? Like, so there's that discernment there.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you so much for bringing this onto the podcast. I'm so excited about it. And I also want to come back to something you mentioned that I think might be a great thing for us to speak about next, which is often confusing for me as a person with hard marketing skills. And I'm sure with Elisa and for you as people with hard marketing skills, and we were talking about this before we jumped on, but like, you know, you're like the taskmaster right now in a lot of big ways, right? For like we just launched a new supplement brand in like literally 2.5 months, kind of ridiculously. And so you have to hold this kind of, I don't know, like call it this, but masculine space. And so do I as a marketer, right? And I think what you said was a lot of what makes me special for these businesses is actually my feminine intuition. And it really lit something up for me because I think I will admit to, I get confused about why people want to hire me for the positions that they hire me for, if that makes sense. I'm like, really? You want me to do that? Oh, okay, sure. I'll just become the director of marketing for this like 7-figure business. You know what I mean? And I get confused by that. And it's like, we just recorded before we hopped on with you, we recorded a podcast on like unique value proposition, like what that is. And I feel like we totally like venerate the masculine, energetic, and hard skills in the business world and in the marketing world. And we don't take into account a lot of the time that actually a lot of our worth probably is that like intuitive, receptive, not that masculine can't be intuitive, but, you know, feminine power. And I wonder if you just speak to that a little bit for us, because I think this is a really interesting discussion.
Yeah. And I think the awareness of this really came online for me when I started really trying to tease out this miscoupling that I had between control and power. Right? Because I think so many of us, you know, were brought up in the age of the girl boss, you know? And when you actually look at the energetics of the girl boss, it's a lot of control. It's a lot of power over. And so I was really confused about that for a really long time. I thought that a woman in her power meant they were technically like kind of in their masculine in a way, right? And it wasn't conscious, but it was deeply confusing for me. I remember, you know, at one of my first like sort of office marketing agency jobs, and I was working as a project manager, and my boss, who I looked up to at the time because she had that total girl boss energy, and I felt like I could learn from it in some way. And I remember her feedback to me was, you're not assertive enough with the clients. And that really struck me, because I've always considered myself and seen myself as quite an assertive person. And I sat with this for a while, and I started to realize that our definitions of assertive were vastly different. And in that culture, being assertive was like essentially being condescending and rude, but that was seen as powerful and assertive. And I had a vastly different definition. And so as I went on throughout my career, I started to begin to work with does it mean to actually be in your power, but particularly a woman in her power. And I started to kind of think about mostly birthing women, because that's where, you know, I sort of have the vision of a woman in her power. And I started to think about how it becomes about surrender. It becomes about collaboration with spirit. It's co-creative. You know, none of those things is someone standing in a silo barking orders at someone. You know what I mean? And so as I continued on throughout my career, I would find myself, however, in these roles that were highly masculine. So particularly in project management or operations, these types of things, right, that have a very directional linear energy where you are kind of bossing people around. And that was always like natural to me, because it was very much in alignment with my childhood defenses. It's what kept me safe as a child. So vigilance, control, organizational logic, and rational mind. So it was very natural to me, and I could work in that way. But as I started to do more of this work of attuning more and more to my feminine essence and leaning into that inner power, aligning with my intuition, all of that, I started to recognize that I would, interestingly, oftentimes, and this isn't always the case, but mostly with men. So I would end up getting into these roles where I would be, the man would be the boss, and I would be like always second in command to them. And it would always deeply confuse me, because they'd ask me to do these tasks that are like not for the feminine mind, to like budget and numbers and money and like all these things that it's like, if you actually look at masculine and feminine energetics, like a man is in a lot of ways, of course, there are women out there who can run the finances and run the business and do all these things, but truly it's a kind of a masculine role. And oftentimes I'd be like, why are they asking me to do this, sort of similar to you, Don? And they would keep me, and I would not be the most suited for that, but they would keep me in this like second in command role. And I started to realize that a lot of it was because I had this ability to hone in on my intuition and to make decisions from that place, which is not a tangible thing, but they'd often be spot on, if not always spot on. And that the intuition around team dynamics, it would be intuition around projects to take on, not take on, intuition around strategy, just so many different things that I would just have a gut instinct and I would say it because I could not. And I think that particularly in these dynamics with men, I think that there was a trust in that because they weren't quite attuned to it themselves. And that is what put me in a position where I was in some ways irreplaceable, because you can't, it's not tangible. You know what I mean? You can't train someone. And discernment is another piece that I think is available to many women who are attuned to themselves, is a discernment, right? You can't teach that. So I guess to answer your question, I can play in this masculine space, but if I can't allow myself to speak openly about, you know, how my feminine gifts feed that, I'm probably not as much value to a business as I am when I allow myself to lead from that place. And that also goes to like nurturing other team members, you know, being a safe space, being an open space, as opposed to, you know, treating people transactionally, which is what happens in a lot of businesses when we don't have that feminine force. So
you are definitely irreplaceable.
Thank you.
I've been hearing recently from a few places, you know, when you have the same like nugget of wisdom given to you like three times the same week. And for me lately, this has been like in a relationship, like man and woman, that it's often the woman's consciousness that can kind of inform the consciousness for both. Not to say, like, not to belittle, like, no shade thrown at men at all, but it's sort of like, because sometimes women taking new steps in their spiritual path or practice that perhaps get them into this like enchantress, dark sorceress mode when we've all been in like love and light. Like, I think, you know, spiritual practice. And in certain male yogic traditions, there's not as much of a permission field, perhaps, for women to like explore dark feminine. There's not a frame there, right? Although there is devotion given to the dark mother and like different versions of the mother. So, but like hearing that when a woman takes this exploration, perhaps not to fear leaving the partner behind because it can inspire and elevate a man in relationship. And I've heard that like sort of three times in the last few weeks. And it makes me think about this kind of aspect of having a male and a second in command who's a woman who maybe like with those intuition or those feminine gifts can help elevate the business on a level toward truth and consciousness expansion.
And to also help remind the men of their own gifts and power. And like, it's so subtle, but it's like for a man to feel a woman's trust is like deeply empowering, right? For them to go off and perform on their mission. And obviously this happens in relationship to female clients as well, in much the way that you spoke to, Dawn, where like for me, I cannot work on a team if I don't have relationship to people. It would, like you explain, like where I can be like, guys, I'm bleeding right now. Like if I can't say that openly, if I can't have that level of communication, or, you know, to say, just to be able to say, okay, I'm going to say something. It's not fully formed. It hasn't fully landed, but this feels true. Like whatever it is, if I can't speak openly from that place, right? If I have to wear that mask of being hyper professional, and it's like, it's not going to work. So I think even in relationship to female clients, to have like, that's kind of the gift of being in relationship to other women, is we can speak openly in this way. And so it just opens the channel for more humanness and more of our cyclical nature and gifts to come through without shame, without having to fit in like a, I don't know, I don't love this word anymore, but like patriarchal box, you know what I mean? Like it's just, there's more openness. And I think, you know, most women who are playing in a business are in some way having to fit themselves in some sort of masculine container, even if that's not the intention. It's sort of the nature of any, you know, kind of any operation. And so it's like to be able to open up our gifts and to share in that way, I just think it softens it for all of us. So
important. And it makes me want to steer our conversation in a direction that I know the three of us are all really just contemplating right now, not that we have the answer. So if you're listening right now and you think that anything we say is the answer, please understand that this is just an exploration. And I'm going to contextualize it by speaking about, calling back to what you spoke about of like when you first were working in an agency, it felt like you had to like be this masculine way. I remember when I was studying political science, it struck me that like the only women who came into power were like Margaret Thatcher style women or Hillary Clinton style women. Like you needed to be a man, you know, it was like a pantsuit, right? Like a woman in a pantsuit. And actually, that was like pre-girl boss. And I actually think girl boss was allowed to be a little bit more feminine, right? It was like we were allowed to like get our nails done and wear lipstick or whatever and still be like the boss. But what I've been seeing with people we really admire is, and this is, I speak about this on the podcast a lot slash in life, this like silly pendulum swing, right? Where, you know, prior to the feminist movement, like we weren't even allowed to learn how to read or something, right? Like I'm just, you know, and so of course we wanted to be able to vote and be able to work and like, you know, have a mortgage and have a credit card or just like even open a bank account on our own. And then it swung all the way to like all, and this is what I like, I had a struggle with like feminism and I still do, but different. But like the only way to be valuable as a woman would be to be outside of the house, making money, living in the public versus the private, right? And now it feels like there's a swing that we're seeing with a lot of like women who created successful businesses. And they're like, oh, I actually just want a man to hold it all now. And it's like, we're like venerating trad wifery or what have you. And I just like wish, and this is where I'm saying, we don't know. Okay. Us three girls, we don't know, but I wish there could be this like happy medium. I wish there could be a place where, you know, you could be in your feminine power. And first of all, if you choose to stay in the home and just raise, not just, but raise children, that's cool because that wasn't cool for a while in feminism. But if you choose to go out there and like have your girl empire, and that sounds horrible. I hate the word girl boss. I always are actually, and boss babe, I hated that. When I first owned the yoga studio, people were like, you're such a boss babe. I'm like, F off. I'm a babe and I'm a boss. These are different things. They don't have to put it together. No one's like, you're such a boss, dude. You know, anyway, but I feel like it's so hard to figure out what this balance is of like having my creative life, which doesn't have to be in the commercial space, but also like feeling valuable and in the like, I wouldn't call it like the commercialized way of existing and like being able to help grow a business or grow my own business. And also, like be a woman and maybe a mother. And like, what does that look like? And why do all of these successful women out there these days, and like Kelly Brogan's put out a couple podcasts about this because she's in this place where she seems like, you know, she regrets some of the energy that went into her business at this point in her life. And I think that's totally fair because so many of us didn't give the energy to our children that we wish we did. I haven't had children, so we'll see what happens when that happens for me. And I don't want it to be like, oh, okay, that means I need to have a rich husband who takes care of everything either, right? So yeah, my question to you gals and anyone listening is like, where do we find this place where we can both celebrate our ability to work, especially our ability to like work and serve in alignment with our cycles? And also, you know, maybe take the time to just not, I hate the word just, sorry, to like be a mother or be in that really like feminine role. And how do we find a way where it can be both, you know, where, and maybe it doesn't, maybe it is cyclical. So it comes and goes, but also, I don't know, like if I had a child for sure, for a little while, I would not want to work, but then I think I would want to like, you know, hang out with you guys on Zoom again and do adult things with adult people where we're like making big moves in the world. So yeah, my question to you guys is, what the heck do we do with this?
I don't know that I can answer that. As you said, I've been both. I've been a stay-at-home mom and I've been a working mom. And, you know, when I do bring it back to the seasons, it makes sense why I made the decisions that I did when I did. So like I knew from the moment that I got pregnant, this is why I got rid of my previous business and podcast, was because I knew that the second I gave birth, I wanted to be solely focused on motherhood. I didn't want a competing force in my life. I knew that. And it wasn't difficult for me to give that up, despite the fact that it was growing a lot of momentum and showing signs of really great profitability. I was just so clear about where I stood in relationship to motherhood. And then when I decided to go back to work when my son was one, looking back, there were reasons I wanted to go back. Specifically, it was like the people. I had a safe haven with the people that I was working with that was really meaningful to me at that particular moment in time and a lot of the inner transformation I was going through. I also think I wanted a break. And it's kind of sad to think about, but I think this is real for a lot of women, is it never occurred to me that I could just hire a part-time nanny and take the mornings to myself. That didn't for rest, right? Like that would be like, what are you even doing with your life? Like, you're going to be a stay-at-home mom and have someone come watch your kid. Like, what are you contributing, right? Like, that would be the voice going through my head. It didn't occur to me that I could hire a babysitter for 3 hours a couple times a week and go to a yoga class and still be a stay-at-home mom. Like, so in my, you know, my limited perspective, I thought that I, you know, to get that break, which is really what I needed and desired, meant that I had to go to work, you know? And so, right? So it's so I did that, and I struggled 2 years through that because of the lack of balance that created in our family life, especially with a child that was so young. And also because my heart was with my child. Like, I was devoted to my work, but I was split, right? At a time that I was also very much depleted. So it's, you know, I wasn't working with a cup that was overflowing, let's just say. And then I eventually made the decision to really commit to being with my son. And I stayed home with him for 2 years. And there was a lot going on in the world at that time. And there was a lot of heightened, like, politics and emotional fields and nervous system stuff. And it was, you know, it was not an easy time to be at home alone with a child all day. And I had a difficult time with that too. I don't regret it. I look back on it and I'm so happy for how present I was during that time and in the memories that I have with my son during that window. And I would have never felt comfortable putting him in anyone else's care so young. So I have zero regret. But what contributed to the decision of me going back to work after that 2 year, almost 3 year period, was recognizing that I also wasn't fully fulfilled in that experience. And going back to the seasons, like, you know, there's the seasons of a child's life and development, which shifts your relationship to motherhood and your relationship to work, right? So my son is older now, and it started to feel like that time apart from one another for periods of time was healthy. And it started to feel like me having something that I could plug into that wasn't motherhood was actually really balancing to the nervous system of the family, you know? And so I don't know that it's black and white for anyone. And I'm also starting to open to the fact that it's not like it could shift again, you know, whether or not I have another child, it could shift again that I want to, I don't know, pull my kid out of school and homeschool and spend all my time with him. And there's so many, I don't know that there needs to be one way, you know, across the board, but I do feel, as somebody who is devotional to both my work and my mothering, I do feel that there can be conflict. There can be conflict where I 100% receive a dopamine hit every time I turn on Slack, and I get a feeling of a shot of worthiness, you know what I mean, from that experience and the roles I play on teams, and that I don't have as easy access to sometimes in family life. And so when things are difficult as a mother, which can be the case, or when things feel mundane, like I got to go make the almond butter sandwich and, like, whatever, take the skin off the apples and slice the, like, I have to do all these things for the umpteenth time, it can feel tempting to just, like, let me just hit Slack and see what messages I get and plug into that, right? And there's an avoidance there that comes online. And you know, and then I'm getting the mom on, one second, like that never feels good. But there's a way that I play these games, right? Because it's sometimes that dopamine hit or that other role or that can serve as an escape, an avoidance to an otherwise very demanding role that's highly spiritual and something that one would try to resist, right? When you're coming up against your own shadow elements. So I can't say that they have ever seamlessly worked collaboratively where I've been a better, you know, entrepreneur, contractor, like I've been a better business person that has made me a better mom. That hasn't been the case. Like I can say that pretty clearly. I'd say that being a mom has made me better in business. That's true. But I don't know about the other way around. Maybe in providing that break and balance, I could argue it that way. But
and then, of course, if you were the sole provider for your family, that would be an entirely different way of looking at things, right?
I want to make that distinction because I am blessed and fortunate that my partner has pretty much always been the soul, like the bread, not the soul, but the breadwinner. And I've always welcomed that. That's always actually felt like I know that some women might feel resistant to that. And I can totally understand that, but I've always very much welcomed that. That's actually really soothing to my system because that also means that I have more flexibility to play with. And that's not always the case, right? So
yeah. One thing I want to pull out is like, you thought going to work was a break, you know, and it is for sure. I know Shanti too was feeling that way really strong before. And we had her on and now she's like just working Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and she's really spending time with her littles Monday, Friday. But what I also want to pull out is that like, how come just like, you know, you're a beautiful artist in my opinion. And I know like for you, you might be like, shut up, Dawn, but you're an incredibly creative person. And like this thing that it's not okay to hire a babysitter for me to just be by myself or to take a yoga class or to do my art. And that like me expressing myself just as a human, let alone as a woman, but like as a human that women don't feel, and maybe men too, I'm not one, so I don't know. But like we don't feel like we're giving value unless we're giving value like, you know, like I work all day and then I'm like, I should clean more. I should cook more. You know, I don't even have a kid. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like Nathaniel's done everything this week. Like I'm like, you know, I like, oh, I'm bad. And at the same time, I'm like, blah, 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 on the internet. And I feel like that's a lot for women. You know, it's a lot where like, we're not allowed to play in our creative space. No, we think that we aren't allowed to play in our creative space. And that's not a worthy pursuit. It's either like being a perfect mother, or like bringing in a six-figure month. And if I'm not, like I can't take a break and go just be with myself or practice my creativity for no, oh, I'm going to be painting. I should turn these into cards I can sell. Like just, do you know what I mean? So anyway, yeah.
Dawn, you are like pivotal to me in restoring a lot of that thinking actually, because, you know, it was, you had invited me on like a little coaching call just for the heck of it, which was like so welcomed and generous of you. And up until that point, I couldn't see, and this, you know, we talked about this, I couldn't see my creative pursuits as productive or a valuable use of my time. And I think as a mom specifically, that window of self-care time, whatever that is so precious, right? And so I became a master at optimizing that time and utilizing that time in like my first years of motherhood. Like I was so boundary and you could not mess with that time. And I had like a list of self-care things that I would do and all the ways that I was like healing and like literally like practice list. And I'd do this and I'd do this and I'd do this. And it was so regimented. And what was calling at me from the inside was this desire to play through art. And I would keep squashing that voice. And actually I had huge, I wouldn't call it PMS, but like huge waves of tension that would come over me during that luteal part of my that luteal phase of my cycle before my bleed, because it was that restless creative energy that was being like locked up in this prison that didn't have a place, because it wasn't seen as a worth, like it wasn't going to like move the needle forward, whatever that means, right? And when Dawn, you invited me to look at that exercise of creating art as a part of my healing, right? Everything really shifted for me, because it was like, oh, this is where I'm playing with the energy of letting go. This is where I'm playing with the energy of being a child again. There were such rich energetics to play with in the exercise of just creating art, because I had such a restrictive energy around it. And so once you really pointed that out for me, I started to utilize that self-care window for creation of things. And then it became about like, well, how am I going to commodify this, right? Like, how am I going to turn this into a business? Because that's the only way it can be worthwhile or productive or like something worth doing with my time, right? And I had to let go of that too, right? And again, see that creative essence as valuable. And having gifts that come to you in ways that you don't expect it, right? Like the way that would then feed my energy towards my son or my partner. Like those are not things you account for necessarily.
Absolutely. This is so resonant. And I feel like I'm in an echo of that action lately, Suzanne, because I've been playing inside of Madeline Moon's container body of art. And I tell my husband, like, it's not quite an acting class, but I used to be an actress professionally. So my way of sort of framing it is like, I'm going to acting class, or like, I'm going to go, you know, record an acting piece. And like, so it's so interesting, because I feel like something we've all echoed is we often feel bad for like taking alone time or decisions that we make, or how we're momming or how we're businessing or wifing or partnering. And like, there's so much, like, it's such a, so easy, I guess I want to say, for women to be hard on themselves about the decisions, like the, those mini, like, finding the balance, like the different poles. But what I've found from taking this period, where initially I would have been like, no, I can't close the door for 2 hours and be in my own space and be fully present for a call. That's insane on a Tuesday. Like, this is great. This is crazy. Similar to, you know, taking 3 hours for yoga class. And what I've found though is giving and tending my artistry has filled me with so much more energy and life force, or creative ideas for our content with All Connected, or like more playfulness with my son. So I do see in that way how making space for art and artistry and creativity makes me a better mother, right? Like I'm making more jokes. I'm like feeling him in a playful way, because I've created a spirit of play for myself. And it really ties in, I feel like, to this conversation that you brought to the fore in the beginning about your spiritual practice, Suzanne, about like listening and tending your energy and your cycle, so that like this sort of devotional tending to yourself and your cycle frees energy where perhaps there could have been, where I think a lot of women can fall into like being burnt out or overgiving or like resentful, because there's like this, there's an imposed schedule upon us, whether that's in being a mother or working or busy, you know, working from home, and like all of the flows of energy and people and beings that we're like asked to find some sort of balance with. That's my dog. Yeah, dogs and babies and partners and all the things.
Actually, I just want to, this is not directly related to what you were saying, but it instantly reminded me that one of the things that I instantly noticed about you, Elisa, that I like I just had such awe over was like from the first time that I met you on a Zoom call, you had your son. And then, you know, thereafter every call, you know, your son was there, but you had such a steady presence and nervous system to continue the call, to continue your presentation. You did a whole brand strategy presentation. I don't know how you did it with a kid on your hip. And just so steady and focused throughout, but also not neglecting him, like you're making contact with him. And I thought, whoa, I mean, I different children for sure. I never would have been able to do that with my son. Also, my nervous system was not primed at that time to be able to handle sort of a split in focus even. But I think it's like one of the things that like just really struck me about you is just your ability to just work that with such grace. And I'm not glamorizing it because I know that that's probably not easy, you know, and not to say that women, you know, should be able to just like hop on Zoom calls while breastfeeding their kids. Like I recognize that there's like a non-idealism to that as well. But I just felt that you had a grace about you in that where you were, you know, you weren't worried about what the person on the other side was thinking, and you were just, there was a seamlessness. Obviously, I don't know what it's like on the other side, but between your work and your mothering, that I'm not saying that women should necessarily like all aspire to having the best of both worlds and that that exists and all of that. I think that it's always a balance, but when it can be handled in those situations with grace, I have like an awe for that woman. I have such an awe for you. So I just wanted to mention that because it reminded me just now when your dog / child, I'm like, that's perfect, right? Like that's.
Thank you so, so much. And that really underscores something I've been thinking as we've been chatting about this, like, interesting intersection of like, do we want to be like, can we be working women? Do we want to be trad wives? What feminism? What is this? And it's also, and it relates to the cyclical question, because I feel like we have best laid plans. Like my mom work story has sort of been like, we have best laid plans and God has other plans. And the lessons I was sort of given as a mother, like I had idealized the first 40 days and the time, you know, like the spaciousness and all of that. And then my birth, like everything was about, it's like these themes that just kind of impose themselves, but like everything was about endurance. Everything was about how I was stronger than I thought, than I even knew. And so it was about being strong as a woman, but it wasn't like being strong like a woman, like a man, right? It was like an initiation into like, and a lot of my growing up, I feel like I've in the sort of victim triangle, I would be in the victim, or I would be in sort of like flight or fawn. So there was a lot of like, I'm not strong in my sort of methodology and think frame of myself. And so becoming a mother, it was like my birth was 4 days. Like I just, that was an endurance match, right? I was able to birth naturally. We did transfer to the hospital. And then my son was in the NICU for 2 weeks. So I wasn't resting. I was like, he had meconium aspiration. He's okay. But I was walking. I was going to the hospital. I was walking. I was so active. And then I decided to work in short succession, because actually working was like something that held me when my baby and I were separated. So it's just like really interesting how my initiation into motherhood and also birthing all connected, like probably what 4 months after my son was born was all, it was like, for me, it was like all birth energy, you know, and I was invited to do them both at the same time. And somehow this, and we had a beautiful conversation with Jamie Arrigo, a collaborator in our realms, about like, we're working from home remotely and we're nursing, and there is this way that we've been invited into it. And I also don't claim to have all the answers here, but, and I do see though, like ways that like, I always thought it was fun that I was on marketing, these like marketing calls, or was talking and using all these like weird words and all this stuff, or coaching calls and talking to women. When I was pregnant, I was like, this is what my son hears in the womb. Like, isn't that interesting? Or I've had it reflected to me from women something that really touched me, which was like, you know, because there are compromises, of course, with like, I don't always feel like I'm giving him my full attention or the attention that I would love to. But then someone said, well, you know, he gets to watch you being a woman in business, having these cool conversations with women as like some of his core memories. I say women, but like with people doing like amazing things and like showing my passion in the world. So yeah, is there a best of both worlds? I think like with, it's always the striving toward balance maybe.
Yeah. And also like this separation of work and home, this is not real. The separation of work and home, this is something that was created in the last couple hundred years, in my opinion. It's not, it's like women used to work, like they, and their baby was with them because the household took running, and running the household was not the same as it could be for us, where we can go to the grocery store and buy all of our food and then pop it into like the toaster oven and it's ready. Do you know what I mean? Like women used to, like if you wanted bread, you had to knead it, you know, and you were kneading it with your baby there. Now we used to have community, and we still do. I'm going to come back to this, but we used to have community to support us in it. But I think of like, and I don't know anything about this, but I live in Canada, and we have where I live, there's a lot of like historical photos of like Indigenous women with their babies with them as they're on this like nomadic path, you know, in the canoe. And then and part of the work was going to the next place where you were going to be, right? And the, like, I don't like patriarchy as a word either, but like the sort of nuclear family, the sort of like post-war world where women's work was separated from work, and also where we stopped. This is my problem with feminism, is that some wave of it stopped valuing the work of keeping the home and started valuing only like the money in part, right? But the idea that 200 years ago, women weren't working, they were just mothering is not true, in my opinion. I actually think like the women kept, you know, you kind of got back to the work of running and raising and farming and sowing and cooking and like animal husbandry, that you kept doing that. You know, maybe you had a little bit of a healing time, but you kept, I mean, like literally like healing your skin back together after giving birth. And the other side of this is that in the same way that we can honor our cycles in business because we are surrounded by a business community, maybe not every single person in the business, we're going to be like, yeah, I'm bleeding and I'm making bad decisions. Don't let me talk in that meeting, right? Alisa and Jamie, like they were allowed to bring their babies. That didn't, like Alisa showing up with her son didn't mean that she was like doing a bad job in All Connected, if that makes sense. And I think that actually, and we spoke about this on the episode with Jamie, who, by the way, me and Suzanne just interviewed Jamie for a position, and halfway through she had to go get her baby. And it was like, was that going to be okay in the company? Well, she's getting hired, so it had to be okay for her to be that. She's got a newborn-ish, you know what I mean? So yeah, I do think that in the past, there was less ease in life, which meant that like even in the home, the woman needed to keep doing the work and she had her baby with her, which is not to say that like Suzanne should have another baby and be project managing at the same time, but is to say that maybe we can normalize in some way having the child be part of our work life, you know, like maybe that's okay if it feels right, / if it's necessary. Like Alisa had to work. Like that's just like, you know, like in her life, she needed to work. And if she didn't need to work, maybe maybe her son wouldn't be one of my best friends, you know, because we wouldn't have spent so much time on Zoom together. So I do think there's something there about women always have had to multitask. And I think we should be able to honor, this is the part that bothers me, is when we don't honor a woman's decision in either direction, whether that's to work outside the home or take care of their children as their main thing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and I don't know, my mind goes here at times. You know what's true, what's not true. But I often think that it is possible that the women's movement, the feminist movement, you know, especially like the women's movement into the workplace would have been staged. I'm just throwing it out there as a possibility. Truly, as a psychological operation for women to begin to abandon their roles within the household and within their partnerships and all of these things, and to sort of fragment the family life. And I don't know. I mean, I should talk to my grandmother. My grandmother is turning 105 this year, so she is around for all of it. But I do often wonder if women really did want that, if they really did want to go to work, or whether truly, like if they were really. I mean, I'm certain there were unhealthy family situations that women needed to get out of, and this was their outlet. Like, I'm certain that there was. I mean, I'm not certain of anything, but I'm sure that there are scenarios like that. But for the most part, for women who were treated well within their family life or matriarchs, like I do wonder whether they actually wanted to go to work and have the same rights as men and vote and all of these things. And because I know that for me, and this has taken me up until now, I'm turning 37 to realize, which is that I had a mom who was pretty much stay at home, and she worked lightly. Like she would have kind of like she was like a teacher. She would teach English as a second language to immigrants, and so she'd kind of, you know, maybe she'd work a morning, and then but she'd always be there to pick us up from school. She'd always be there to help us with our homework. She'd, you know, she was there, right? And because I grew up in this cultural conditioning towards women in their power, essentially being women in the workforce, women being men, pretty much the girl bosses or whatever you want to call them. I had this resentment towards her for not being a powerful woman, which is for not being a career woman, right? For not being, and I told myself that when I grew up, I was going to be that, and I was going to have a powerful job, and I was going to show my kids what it was to be a powerful woman, working woman. And I've had to do a lot of, you know, deconditioning around that and restoring of my instincts, which were slightly injured in that respect, to be able to say, like, I don't know that that's true, and that I do want that, and that, and you know, and like I have, like I feel apologetic towards my mom, you know, for judging her in that way. And I wonder how much of us have had such a conditioning towards that, that we have convinced ourselves that we, I wouldn't say want to work. I think that there are very, you know, I think that that can come in and out throughout our lives as women, and, you know, especially women who choose to be mothers. But I think that, like, I really wonder how much we can actually trust our own instincts in that respect before doing sort of a resensitization of what is innately ours as women. Because I'm realizing now that wasn't a core desire. It was fed to me to some degree. So it's, and I'm still in evaluation of that, right? Because I do live in this culture, and I was conditioned that way, you know, and I was told the stories of women who marched in the streets because they wanted to work. And now it's like kind of laughable to me. That's my personal thing. But I really do wonder if that was true, you know, or if that was, you know, set up in a lot of ways. So I don't know.
Yes. I agree wholeheartedly. I think choice is the difference. So now we can choose, and we weren't really able to before. And so my intuitive hit around that is that there needed to be a change, and the powers that shouldn't be took that and ran with it, if that makes sense. It's like, oh, yep, these women probably want, like, and they might have, like, planted the seed, you know, because there is a problem when a woman's being abused and she has no recourse, like you were speaking about earlier, right? So that is problematic. And this is why I was talking about that swing, that pendulum, because then we went all the way to the other side where now, and this is where the shift back to, I think, like, you know, like, what's her name, that TikTok star, Nara? You don't know, because neither of you are on TikTok. But this trending towards like trad wife is because of the fact that for a while we weren't allowed to choose that anymore, like choosing that. And like you said, like you were judging your mom for being a mom, right? And I do think there is a big psyop and, excuse me, and I think that, you know, the evolution of human consciousness needed to move in that direction for a while so that we could like find this balance point. But I do think you're right. It's hard to know what's ours even in any way.
Right. I think that's what I was trying to get at. You're right. Yeah. Like what is ours? And then there's also, and this is also like something that's floated past me in the last little bit. And I'm not quite sure where I stand, but this idea of as women working for men that aren't our partners, right? Because my partner is an entrepreneur and he and a business owner and could probably use all the expertise that I offer others, you know? And there's this question, right? Of like, why don't I employ myself to offer that to him? And I do in other ways. But it's sort of like, it's an interesting thing, right? Where we don't keep it in the family anymore. We distribute it outwards. And I think that there is this kind of collective return to family life with, you know, people no longer sending their children to school and keeping the family unit more intact. And I wonder if like the next wave of that is really starting to keep the business in the family, you know? So I don't know. It's a thought that's floated past me.
I love that so much as an observation. And it's interesting because this is reminding me of something you were talking about, like how you were in roles where you were doing like money things and bookkeeping, because it's, I believe, and I've been told this, that like often in like family structures where the woman was at home, bookkeeping could be like in the arena of the woman, right? It sort of like speaks to what you were saying about that intuitive piece. And I feel that I often question, similar to what we were talking about earlier, like skills that I have, because I feel like such a feminine being. And then I'm like, I'm really good at a spreadsheet with, but like a budgeting spreadsheet. And it's like highly intuitive though, right? Like I can like guess how numbers, I can guess numbers and expenses like pretty accurately without the calculation. So like, and I know that we all have that skill. So there's like something about that. Tom's like, or like when we, or like even pricing, right? It can be like, I could do the calculations, or I know this is the number. And sometimes we'll know it's a number and then we'll do a calculation. We'll be like, yep, that was the number.
But I feel like even in planning marketing calendars, like you start to get a sense of like, hey, what content naturally do people need right now? And it's like, not so like, well, we've got to launch about this in 12 days. So let's put this primer content out. It's like starts to become more like I'm feeling my audience and what they need to hear. You know what I mean?
I love it. And I do want to say that like I have often my whole life, I don't know, I'm like the eldest daughter from a single mother family. So I do think I hold that masculine, and I'm not good at budgeting or spreadsheets. So I actually like, you know, like with Elisa as my like work wife, like that's helpful for me because I actually probably lean a little bit more to being in my masculine really easily. And I'm not naturally like tending all of that.
I wouldn't say I'm naturally good at that. I can do it. I'm not naturally good at it, but people want to trust me with it. Is what I'm getting.
I do. Please come do it for me. You know? Okay. I love this conversation so much. I think it's exactly what it needed to be. And I wonder if either of you have anything else you'd like to bring present sort of before we close and tell people there's nowhere they can find Suzanne for more of this.
Do you want to talk about the social media thing or let that be?
Yeah. Why don't we close on that? So, well, I'm just going to ask you, like, Suzanne, how come you have chosen to be absolutely not at all on social media in any way? And how does that also, like, how are you also like the driving force behind businesses at the same time?
Yeah, totally. The choice, it was sort of gradual for me. I got off of Facebook in 2019. Mostly because I was noticing, how should I put this, headlines and news lines that were creating intentional controversy amongst people. And I felt my nervous system responsive to that. And I just made the intuitive choice to, you know, I was a new mom at the time. So my nervous system was already restabilizing and trying to find solid ground. And I just thought, this isn't adding to my life. And then after that, a couple of years, maybe a year or two later, I made the decision to get off of Instagram, mostly because I was interested in like dopamine fasting, which is, you know, I was just hyper aware of the ways in which my attention was being pulled and I was getting these dopamine hits. And I was interested in resensitizing my system to simple pleasures and to really like be able to feel that in my body. And it was sort of a clearing for me. Like I felt like I was clearing like a creative channel almost to not have that noise in the background constantly. And I could see with time away from it, the actual impact that it had was which was much deeper than just nervous system dysregulation or feelings of not enoughness or dopamine hits. I mean, it was really quite psychological when I consider the impact that it had that I think most people aren't sensitive to because it's such, they're so accustomed to it in daily life. And then soon after that, I got rid of my smartphone. So I literally walk around with like an old school dumb phone with T9 text. And I was concerned about that making me no longer savvy in the marketing space. And then I realized there were ways around that. Number one, I don't need to be a social media expert. I just need to know who is the social media expert. So that's fine. And number two, I could still, you know, log on my computer to any public, you know, Instagram or social media profile and see what's trending and how people are speaking and what the trends are. I mean, it's not difficult to catch on to. And then it became a practice of like observing or embracing like silence and emptiness in my life, because I think that most people who are utilizing social media and other forms of media like podcasts and audiobooks, there's a way we put these on in the background constantly, I think, as a way of sort of running from ourselves and the silence. Because when I started a practice of saying, you know, when I'm in the car driving, there's no music on and I'm literally practicing being with myself in that moment, I started to notice this, it felt like a rattling in my cage inside. There was like, and it was when I got quiet with that part of me, like when I tuned into that somatically, I could experience a little girl who was like, her fear was like existential. It was like a terror. And it was like, I'm not worthy of this moment. Like, I'm not worthy of being here. There was like a shame energy. And I realized that like for years since embracing all this technology and all this extra noise, which was, you know, painted as like, I'm learning and I'm hearing different perspectives and I'm getting information and this is part of my personal development, all of that stuff. When I sat with that voice and I could see that there's this part of me that I've walked around with that literally feels like I'm not worthy of being here. And I could have only heard that without that excess noise. And so every time, and I'm probably a bit too militant about it, I could probably stand to like listen to some, you know, Spotify in the car for a couple of drives. But when I sit with myself in silence now, whether that's like chopping potatoes or whatever it is, I see it as like an affirmation to myself that I'm like worthy of being here, that this moment is divine, that I belong, that I take my seat in the community of life, that I exist alongside the tree outside in perfect order. Like, and it's like, it's kind of hellish sometimes, honestly, because I feel that pretty much constantly. And it would be so easy to put on a podcast and not have to hear that from myself. But I know that every time I do it, it's like affirmation to that fragmented part. Like, I've got us. Like, this is it. It's the here and now. It's like, this is all there. This is the only thing that's true. Like, right here, right? This is like the only thing. And it's like, okay. So that's kind of the reason I'm not on social media. You cannot find me. And guess what? I still, you know, I still have a career. I still have people. I still attract people into my life that I am crazy about. Like, I genuinely care about them and their businesses. And I told myself when I got off Instagram, that was a harder one for me for some reason. I literally said a prayer that, because I was so worried about information that I needed to know not finding its way to me. That's what I was so worried about. And I literally just said a prayer, like, any person, any information, anything I need to know, may it find its way to me. And it always has. And I live in a super small town. I don't have Facebook. So unless I've met you in person and shook your hands, I don't know who you are. And I have no preconceived notion of you. And to me, that's the most beautiful thing, because I get to know people authentically. I don't know how many kids you've had. I don't know who you're married to, who you were married to. I don't know what you do for a living. Like, I don't know any. You're stripped of your persona. The only thing I know is what I feel of you in that moment. And that's the only thing I have to go off of. And to me, that's like, that's the resensitization towards our instincts, that like, I know I'm here for, like, that's how I want to like navigate my life. So it's kind of radical, I think, when I tell most people that, and it's a pain, it's kind of self-punitive in a lot of ways, you know, as a mom, you know, other moms like needing to connect, and as like a pain in the ass to like send out a T9 text or like a phone call. But it's like, I do it because it's like so in my bones of the way that I want to experience life.
Thank you, Suzanne. That is so beautiful, making me cry over here. And I wanted to share that earlier in this call, when you first started speaking about your spiritual practice, I felt such a womb activation, like when you were speaking about cyclical living and being connected to the cycles. And I wonder if this is connected to like your willingness to be here now. And would you say, I guess is my last little question for you with this, like, do you feel like a version of womb living? Is the womb a kind of center that you live in? Or yeah, I'm just so, this is connected to me in an intuitive way. I'm not going to think it was what you just said.
I mean, obviously I've been driven. I'm not sure how to answer that. Obviously I've been so driven towards womb work and aligning with our feminine essence and our rhythms and all of that. And it's interesting because I feel like I have this vision that I need to be this, like, I have this vision of like this wild woman, and she has feathers in her hair and she's wears this free flowing dress. And I feel like I need to be that, right? In order to be really embodied in all of this. And so when you say that, I'm like, oh, like, I'm not that, you know, I'm not yet. So, you know, like, I'm feeling like I should be. But I guess in some ways, I don't know that I'm like here to facilitate that, but I'm certainly here to live out my feminine essence. Like, that is so alive in me. And yeah, and it, you know, it takes different forms, but I don't know. I think I maybe have an idea of what it means to be like centered in the womb. And I have this vision and I'm like, I'm not that yet. I want to be. But maybe that's not true. Maybe I am to some degree.
Yeah, I love that so much, because I feel like in the sort of like spiritual spaces where there's so much like imagistic about like what it is to be, you know, the wild woman or the womb centered woman or the reclaimed woman, even, right? That it has to be like an outward display in a certain way, right? But actually, like, that makes me think too of like this, you know, these, all of these like ways where womaning teach us how we woman, and like, it's And it also makes me think of the sort of the dark feminine or that sorceress phase, which is maybe not as much about, or like we've talked to some guests about the empress stage in that, you know, and there's a maturity, which isn't like necessarily like I have to like on an adornment level display that I am her, but like you hold it, right? Or that it's just like in the willingness to have maybe like to be in discomfort and without having the conveniences is like another form of maturity, as well as like a holding our feminine little girl self with so much grace and attention and attentiveness.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
I feel that too, that pressure to be the light.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I've sought out teachers online for a lot of this female wisdom and some of it gets so overpackaged and processed, you know, with that imagery that you're almost like, I don't trust this, you know? Whereas sometimes the most low key, down to earth, women, there's, we'll say her wrong, Minka DeVau, I think that's how you pronounce her name. She wrote a book called Tao Tantric Arts for Women, and she's based in BC. And she is like divine. Like it's like, and previously when I would seek out teachings, particularly around feminine, you know, Taoist sexual practices or feminine or female sexual energy and stuff, it always felt like a bit scary to me. Like it was sort of like, oh, I don't want to engage this. Like it felt scary because there was also an energy around it that was like, you have to be this and not this, right? Or there was a good way of expressing it, that sexual energy, in a bad way. And I learned about Minka's teachings and I felt like so at ease and so not scared of like the big scary like sexuality, like sexual energy. Like it was so, it felt like earth energy. It felt like easeful. And if you look her up online, it's almost impossible to like make her website work and to like get through to her. I think she has like 12 different emails. I don't know which one works. And it's so, and there's nothing flashy about it. And yet it feels so trustworthy to me because it's not packaged and overly processed in that way. And there is an allowance there for women to be who they are in all of those expressions. So thank you for saying that. So I would actually go back and answer yes to your question. I do think that, you know, in some ways I'm here to kind of take my seat in my womb and like lead from that place.
Okay. I love that. And I love that, Elisa, you were able to call Suzanne on that because that's what I wanted to do too. And I also think it comes back to this like, oh, well, I'm not a coach of it. Not that you said that, Suzanne, but you're more like about the exterior trappings by like, well, I haven't commodified it yet, so I'm probably not it. And so, and that's not exactly what you said, but I feel like that's like almost the next logical step or like, how most of us would feel about it. Well, I'm not an expert of that because I haven't been paid to teach it. So yeah. So thank you, Elisa. And thank you, Suzanne. And yeah, I'm just so, so grateful that, you said that prayer that allowed me and Elisa to be found by you. Cause I still don't know how that happened. Probably Scott, I guess, or maybe Rye. I'm not sure, but I'm so, so grateful. I'm so grateful to have you in my life. And the fact that I'm sorry, listeners, but there isn't anywhere to find Suzanne to get more of this, but you could ask us and maybe we could have her back on. Not maybe, we certainly will. And one thing that strikes me, the more I get to know you, Suzanne, and we had your partner on the pod recently too, and the more I get to know him, the more I think that you are one of the most intelligent people I have ever, ever met in my entire life, with such a level of embodied wisdom. And then so is Rye, another one. And I'm like, wow, that this power couple exists is insane. And that they're in my life is so, so special. So thank you for coming on and sharing. I knew this was going to be a potent conversation. And because you don't have content on the internet, I didn't know where we were going to go with it, right? So thank you for leading it in this way. Thank you for being a forerunner to podcasts. manifesting and being a yogi in business, because that is what Suzanne did before she let it all go. And yeah, I'm just so grateful to have you on today. And yeah, if you guys want to find more of her, you know, come work with us. That seems to be the way. Or you can move to a small town in Quebec and be a mom friend, because I do know that Suzanne's looking for more aligned female friends too. Right. So,
yes, I just want to express gratitude as well. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. When you asked me, I was like, what do I have to offer? I don't know what we're going to talk about. I really enjoyed this. I don't know what it has been now, hour and a half or something. Mostly really to connect with you both. And Dawn, you've had like quite an impact in my life over the past year in, you know, really helping me see my own gifts and talents. And Elisa, I've taken a lot of inspiration from you. Actually, one of I remember when Kelly Brogan came out with her book, and I know that you had a role to play in that. And I knew that you had, you know, not so long ago given birth, and also given birth to All Connected. And I messaged John on the side and I was like, holy fertility. Like, this woman is super fertile. And I took a lot of inspiration from that in knowing that there's a lot of fertile energy and synergy between us that has uplifted me this past year. So thank you.
So much, same here. Thank you, Suzanne. I feel so blissed out, you guys, by this conversation. Don't have words anymore.
Thank you for listening. If you made it to the end, then you probably want more of Suzanne. So you know where to find me. I am on Instagram, and you can be like, bring this woman back, or comment on the YouTube and let us know. I don't think this conversation has been had this beautifully anywhere on the internet yet. So thank you so much for bringing your wisdom and your beauty here. And I can't wait for this to go live and to have reels to clip of you. So that's the only place people will be able to find you, is on the All Connected Instagram. Yeah. So much gratitude to you both. And just extremely stoked on this conversation and our continued collaboration in life. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Softpreneur Podcast. If it resonated with your ethos and your soul, we would be so grateful to you if you leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast.
This helps us grow so much, and it also helps more visionary business owners find the show so they can make their dream life their real life. So many blessings and love.